Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the lifestyle coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Hello, guys. This is Lydia, the lifestyle coach, and we are ending eating disorders using nothing but your brain. And we are coming to you with another really wonderful story. You guys, this woman that we are going to hear from today is just a total rock star, like so coachable, shows up, does the work, is just like such an amazing light. And I am really, really excited to celebrate her today, you guys. Like, you know, we have women from all walks of life. I mean, young and old. Let's see, in just the past probably 6 months, we had a 19-year-old graduate with her freedom after years of an eating disorder, and we had a 77-year-old graduate with her freedom after many more years of an eating disorder. And the cool thing is that it doesn't matter if you've been struggling for 6 months or 60 years, the same principles lead you to freedom. And just so excited to celebrate the women that are on this journey and becoming more and more free and stepping into their power. And I'm really excited for you guys to get to know an incredible one of those ladies today, the wonderful, the amazing Sarah. Yeah, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, so fun to see you on. And Sarah, just excited to learn about you and to hear your story and to just celebrate this cool, cool transformation that's happened. So let's just start out with, give us a little bit of background. Like, where did you first see like the disordered eating popping up? Like, how did this start manifesting at first in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting for me because, you know, that's a question that I've often asked myself, especially, I mean, I feel like a lot of freedom stories that I've watched on here before, people have like this either pinpoint moment where, you know, things started spiraling out of control for them. But for me, it's a progression that I don't really know exactly how happened or where it started. I know a lot of people, their eating disorders start with restriction and dieting. That is something that really wasn't true for me, at least from what I remember. I often think that at some point I must have tried to, you know, control, even if it was an extreme restriction, I must have tried to, you know, control my food intake. I do remember after I stopped playing volleyball in high school, I wanted to just, you know, continue being healthy and working out and being active. Oops, it says my battery is running low, but it's plugged in. So, okay. So I know I made a conscious effort to go to the gym and, you know, just eat a little bit healthier, nothing too crazy, but try and maintain the fitness that I had got while I was playing volleyball. So, that started, and I started my first job my junior year of high school, and that was in the kitchen of a nursing home. And it was really great, all fun and dandy at first. I really enjoyed it. But somewhere along the lines of working there is really when I started noticing these disordered thoughts about food. One of my first specific memories was being in these, like, they called them like dietary rooms, like little food rooms with refrigerators and sinks and stuff on the nursing home floors. And one of my jobs was to go in there and stock them with snacks so that the residents could have them, you know, whenever they needed them. And I just remember being in one of those rooms and like not even thinking about it. It was like there was no thought process behind it or anything. And just like grabbing a package of peanut butter crackers and cheese crackers and fudge cookie strips and just like being in there trying to shove them all in my mouth as fast as possible before any of the nurses, you know, walked in. And then like to the point, you know, how you ever stuffed your face so much that you like, you know, can't breathe or like can't even chew fast enough to get it on there.
Yeah.
So just like that. And it was so weird. Like I remember having all that food in my mouth at once and being like, what am I doing? Like, why did I just do that? Like, what was the point of that? Like, it was just the weirdest feeling. It felt so out of control. It came absolutely out of nowhere. Like I said, I don't remember being like restrictive before it. So I just felt like there was absolutely no reason for it. Like, I don't remember craving stuff. I don't remember any of that. It was just like something that happened. Then I was like, okay, that was super weird. Like, not going to do that again. Like, that is embarrassing. You know, imagine if somebody walked in and saw me doing that. Embarrassing. So that's one of the first memories that I have. That's something I'll probably never forget too, which is weird because, you know, I feel like I don't remember much other stuff that happened, but that's just something that'll always stick with me.
So Sarah, I love that you shared that. So let's bring awareness to some pieces there, because that's really important. Like, I really appreciate your story and what you brought up there, because either one of two things usually happens. Either one, we have this incident where it's like, okay, this hard thing happened, and then I went to food and that was my first binge. And so we spend 20 years trying to like resolve the trauma around that one thing that happened. Or we don't know where it came from and we just saw ourselves doing this. So then we spend the next 20 years trying to figure out where it started and what the origin was. So then we can resolve that. And either way is like a losing game. And so I think it's really important to understand that it doesn't really matter how or why it started. It's just about being able to, whatever it is now, to be able to end it. And I think this is an interesting thing you bring up. And I totally remember that feeling of seeing yourself do something and your brain is racing, like, why am I doing this? What am I doing? It's like this detachment where you're like really confused, but then you're seeing yourself do something that's just, like you said, like so embarrassing. So we're bringing that up because it's such an important part of that journey to see, like, oh, okay, like what matters and what doesn't, and that everyone's journey is a little bit different. So that was sort of what stuck with you, right? Of like, okay, so you remember that incident. So where did things go from there?
Yeah. So from there, again, the progression of things is pretty blurry, but I just know that my thoughts about food were increasing. It seemed like by the day, I'm sure. And then, you know, when something like that happens, then the next thought is, like I said, you know, well, got to make sure that doesn't happen again, like not going to do that. So although I don't specifically remember it, I'm sure I tried to be more careful at that point and like, you know, avoid foods at work even more. But the funny part is like you're working in a kitchen, you can't avoid food. It's there all the time. So, I just started thinking about food a lot more. I started having more treats at work, and I remember just being like mad at myself and just having a lot of guilt around it. Like, why can't I resist the treats? Like, why does it seem like everybody else here doesn't seem to think or care about the food? Like, how can you not care about the food? Like, there's food everywhere, that kind of thing. And it was, you know, when you think of nursing home food, like, it sounds like, ew, gross. But I'm talking more about the like snack stuff that they have, prepackaged things. So that lasted pretty much the whole time that I worked there. I mean, I remember they would have birthday parties for the residents there, and they would make all kinds of like actually good food for that stuff. But I remember specifically one time them doing mini cupcakes and me just being like obsessed with the mini cupcakes, like trying to resist them the whole entire night. And then, you know, by the end of the night, I'm remembering how many I've eaten, and I've probably eaten like 12 mini cupcakes, and it's just getting pissed off because I remember one of the other people working there saying they don't really like sweets and they don't really care about that stuff, and just being like, how, you know, super, super frustrating. I was like that for a while. And then I think it started off mostly at work and eventually progressed into eating a lot at home as well. I remember eating like sleeves of Ritz crackers with peanut butter and then just feeling so bloated and guilty after. I would force myself to go for a walk, and on those walks just being like, you're not going to do this anymore, this isn't going to happen anymore. And at this point, still not knowing like what was happening or what was wrong with me, it was just like I didn't know what it was called, I didn't know anything about it. But somewhere along the line, I know I was researching it, looking it up, and finally I found the term binge eating disorder, and I was like, God, like, I think that's me. And again, feeling this incredible sense of like guilt and just like self-loathing, like, how did I let this happen to me? Like, I'm not someone who has an eating disorder. I'm not like, and reading, you know, other people's stories, how it starts with dieting and all that. And I'm like, that's not me. That's not how this happened. And so just feeling really lost and confused and alone and like everything was wrong, you know? But little did I know things were going to get much, much, much worse, which is, you know, at that point would have been crazy to think about because, you know, when you're at that point, you feel like, how could things be any worse? How could I lose any more control? But sure enough, I did. So I ended up leaving that job and working where my mom works, which is the food and nutrition department of a hospital. So again, it was another kitchen. And at some point there, it just, you know, things got out of control even more. And the food choices were even more because it was a bigger facility and the food was better, believe it or not. So there was like actual, like rather than just snacks and stuff, there was like pizza that they would make and mac and cheese every day, like things that they would make every day because they would have them for the patients. And it was just like the temptation of everything, you know, the temptation of I shouldn't eat this and I shouldn't eat that. But, you know, telling myself that was really what was making everything worse. And something that I've thought about a lot along my journey is I've never been someone who I think physically restricted. Like, I'm not going to say I never physically restricted because that's definitely not true. But I wasn't like one of those people that would go all day without eating and then binge. Like, I know that's a lot of people have cycles like that. But for me, it was more the mental restriction, the constant, I shouldn't be eating this. I shouldn't want this. Like, it's wrong to want this. This is a bad food. This is a good food, you know, all of that. And that's really what drove the obsessive thoughts about food. But yeah, at that point, working in that new kitchen with all the new food selections and everything, actually, it's funny because I remember when I first switched to that job, I thought things were going to be better because I wasn't as comfortable there. There was more strict rules about what you could eat and what you couldn't eat. And I just remember thinking, like, this is great. Like, this is going to be the end of things. Like, this is where things are going to change. And, you know, within probably 6 months, I know at a year of working there, I was 100% comfortable with everybody there. I was eating whatever I wanted. Even I was eating things I didn't want to eat, but what Patter said I really wanted. And it just felt like everything was out of control. I felt like I had no control around food. I felt like I was a crazy person. And it was, again, you know, this constant comparison to everybody else who I worked with. Funny because I remember people specifically telling me, like, I would make comments about, how do you guys work around all this food? Like, don't you want to just eat all this food all the time? You know, in a joking way, because meanwhile, I'm this like, you know, small girl and everyone's like, no one would ever imagine how much I was actually eating when no one was looking. And I remember people saying, yeah, it's like that in the beginning, but then you just get sick of it. You know, like you get sick of the cookies and the cake that's always around and the mac and cheese pizza, whatever. Like, you'll get over it. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, okay, never got over it.
Yeah. And I mean that, I know that comparison, right? Of just like, it's like the more that this goes on and then you share things here and there and you start seeing how, like you said, that lonely feeling of like,
yeah,
I mean, nobody else feels this way. Like, that's going away for other people. And they're like, oh gosh, I'm so sick of those cookies. And you're just like, this is not going away for me.
Yeah.
And I really want to highlight as well this idea, because this keeps people in the cycle for so long of, okay, well, this thing in my life is changing, so it's going to get better now, right? Okay, I'm changing a job, so I'm sure things are going to get better. Okay, well, I'm changing my diet, so I'm sure things are going to get better. Okay, well, I'm changing this thing about myself. Well, now that I'm journaling, well, I'm going to move. You know, it's like, well, now I'm in a new relationship. Well, now I'm not in this relationship anymore. And then it's like every sort of milestone in life is like this new beginning of like, now things are going to be different. And it gets more and more discouraging as you go along because it's everything you think is going to change it. And then it gets even worse. And Right. Yeah, I know that's a really hard piece of it. So you were working here, Sarah, like you were seeing this like escalating. What was sort of that next thing that happened for you as things got worse?
Well, also while I was working there, I moved out of my parents' house into my mom's parents' house. not for, like, I've always had a great relationship with my parents. It was, you know, nothing to do with that. It was just that the house that I grew up in was really a very small house for five people. And I'm a growing girl and I just wanted more privacy. And my grandparents had a room in the basement of their house that was open and they were nice enough to let me move in with them. And it was, again, you know, something, a big change in my life. And exactly like you were just saying, I remember promising to myself, I'm not going to binge in this house. Things are going to be different in this house. I'm not going to have access. I'm going to be buying my own food. So I'm not going to have access to all the junk food that my parents would buy for like my brothers and whatnot. And it was exactly like you said, just this vow of everything's going to be different. And this is the end once again. And lo and behold, nothing changed. Absolutely nothing changed. I mean, maybe for like one or two days in the beginning, I felt like, okay, like new setting, new me, but it wasn't at all like that. And it actually did make things worse eventually because I found myself alone a lot more. I didn't, like I said, my parents' house was really small. So like everything that you did, like the kitchen was attached to the living room's attached to my parents' bedroom. Like you could see everything from everywhere. So I had a lot more privacy and it was a lot easier to, like, you know, if I wanted to go out and buy things and bring them home and sit in my room and eat all night, basically. And I would bring things home from work, you know, leftover pizza or whatever. And sometimes I would bring things home for my boyfriend and end up eating that too. And like that sense of guilt is just, you know, horrible. And it really just made things completely worse. I mean, it had definitely by this point spiraled into a full blown eating disorder. I knew it was like a binge eating disorder, but it was also just like, it wasn't just the binge eating. It was just the constant thoughts about food, the constant thoughts, this is bad, this is good, I shouldn't eat this, I should eat that. And I just remember constantly thinking to myself, like, how did this happen? Like, how did I get myself here? How did I let myself get so bad? And then, you know, working in the kitchen at that point was just like an alcoholic working in a liquor store. It was completely destructive. And I feel like the worst part about all of this, because by this time I had been dealing with the eating disorder for probably like 2.5, maybe even 3 years. Yeah, probably like 3 years. And I never told anybody. I was so embarrassed. I felt so like isolated. Like even if I did tell anybody, what's the point? Like nobody would understand. And I didn't think anyone would take me seriously too, because of the fact that like my weight never really changed. And which to this day, I'm still like, I don't know how, because like I said, I wasn't like a heavy restrictor or anything. So like I would have these binges and then, you know, still eat somewhat normally. But yeah, I thought people wouldn't take me seriously because I'm not, you know, I didn't gain all this weight and everything. And another part of it is like thinking of these other people that I would work with who were bigger than me. And it sounds messed up saying it, but like eating disorder thoughts are messed up. But just being like so jealous and so like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, how do all these other people here who are bigger than me, who obviously eat more than me and blah, 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 how are they not as preoccupied with food as me? So that was another part that like killed me, was like, there's something seriously wrong with me, you know? And it was also somewhere around this time that I briefly opened up to my boyfriend. I mean, I felt like I didn't have a choice, because the way that I would act around him sometimes, it would be like I was super upset and it's not myself, and like super self-loathing. I mean, the self-hatred was like unreal by this point. Even if I didn't show it all the time, like a lot of time it was internalized. But when I started dating my boyfriend, he was like the closest person I had, and he would see that side of me a lot more than like anybody else could ever imagine. And I knew it was super unfair to him because he had no idea why I was like that. And I felt horrible about it. So one day I did open up to him about it. I don't remember exactly how it went, but I remember just telling him like, there's something wrong with me. Like I'm messed up, you know, like I have this problem. And I just remember like, this was all through text message too, because I couldn't dare to like say things to his face. But texting him and being like, Oh, and I was sitting in my car and it took me so long to like type this out. And even after I had it typed out, like sending it, it was just like the scariest thing ever. Cause this was like the first time I ever said anything to anyone. And I said, just look up binge eating disorder. I'm like, that's what I have. That's what I've been going through. And it is destroying my life, basically. So he did that. And of course he was, you know, super supportive and always offered, like, my boyfriend's amazing. No matter how much I didn't want to talk to him about things, I always knew that I could. It was just finding the courage to be able to do that. So even after I did open up to him about that, it's not something that we really talked about, mostly because I was super uncomfortable about it and he knew that, so he wouldn't bring it up. And yeah, things just kept getting worse and I kept hating myself even more and letting that show even more. And next thing I know, we had talked about it after that, and I basically made a promise to him that I would bring it up with my doctor because that felt like the next step for me, and I just had to tell somebody else. So I brought it up with my doctor, which was, again, the hardest thing I ever did. I remember just being in the doctor's office, breaking down in tears, just like humiliated and, you know, again, wondering how did I get to this point, but also at the same time, feeling grateful that I finally had enough courage to tell someone else about it. So I did that, and she gave me, you know, she was super sweet about it, of course, and gave me referrals for a therapist and a nutritionist and all the typical things that you would do for someone who has an eating disorder. And I remember I did call the therapist, and I think I had to leave her a message. She called me the next day, left me a message. And for whatever reason after that, I never called her back, never did those sessions. And the other thing I forgot to mention too is I can't remember if it was, I think it was before the doctor's office, because part of the reason that I didn't end up calling the therapist back is because I didn't really think it would help. Like, I knew it might've been nice to have somebody to talk to about it, but with the cost of a therapist, I didn't think it was really kind of worth the payout, because I did, you know, during the last year or whatever, not as of right now, but at that point in that past year, I had been doing a lot of research, been watching a ton of YouTube videos about people's experience with it, just trying to, you know, heal myself as a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And came across the book Brain Over Binge, and I was like, oh, like this is it. Like, this is what I've been looking for. This is what I need. I went on Amazon. I ordered it that day. Got it a little bit after that, and I started reading it, and I already knew like the principles of it or the idea behind it from other videos that I had watched. But reading for myself, all of a sudden, you know, I had this glimmer of hope again, and this idea that, you know, maybe something's not wrong with me. Well, I still felt like something was wrong with me, but it was something that I could fix, and that something other people had fixed. And you know, reading Katherine Hansen's story was just incredible, because I was like, this is someone who, you know, she had bulimia, which was different for me. I never purged in any way. I never over-exercised or things like that. But just knowing that that someone out there had stopped these binges was like amazing for me. And I'm like, maybe there's hope for this. So I read it and I started practicing, you know, the ideas that were in it. And I remember telling myself, I have like an image of myself walking through the basement of my grandparents' house where I was living, telling myself, I have two brains. Like, this is not me. Like, I don't have to make these choices, blah, blah, blah. And still, you know, knowing that, but then still making the choice to go and binge on whatever it was that I had. And then, you know, honestly feeling more guilty and more broken at that point, because I knew that
they were just, right?
Thoughts. Thoughts we have every single day that we don't act on. Like, if these are just thoughts, then why can't I not act on these thoughts? Like, why do I feel so controlled? Like, I have no options, you know? Like, everything was just what was going to happen was what was going to happen. There was no other option. There was no other way to do things. I found myself stuck again. I put the book under my bed. I hid it, you know, because I had to hide it from everyone. I couldn't, God forbid anybody ever found that book. And, you know, I never really forgot about it. Like, the ideas behind it always stuck with me because it made so much sense. And again, why I didn't really want to go to therapy. And well, I shouldn't say I didn't want to go to therapy because I did, but again, I just didn't have a lot of money at this point. I just didn't feel like, you know, the copay every time I was going to go was going to be worth it. I didn't think a nutritionist would help. I just felt hopeless again. And yeah, I mean, things were basically all the same after that, just feeling out of control, completely hopeless, waking up for work at 6 a.m. shifts and just feeling like I wanted to die. Like it was so awful waking up with a bloated stomach. Like, how did I do this again? Why did I do this again? I know this is going to be the feeling that I get. Why do I keep doing this to myself? And it was terrible. It was really terrible. I mean, it was getting to the point where I would wake up in the morning sometimes and within 30 minutes be like super nauseous, and being scared because I'm like, why do I feel so, like, you know, like you ever dry heave and it's like you're gagging, but nothing is there. And I remember like looking it up, like, what is wrong with me? And coming across the fact that it was probably that I was, you know, binging at night. So my blood sugar was just going sky high and then crashing. And I'd wake up in the morning and my blood sugar would be so low. And that, you know, makes you feel nauseous and sick. And I remember reading that and being like, wow, like I'm freaking sick. Like I'm messed up, you know, for, for leaving the profanity out. I am messed up. And again, just feeling completely helpless, completely lost, completely alone. Even though I had told my boyfriend, I didn't want to talk to him about it. I think the only other person who I like joked about it before was my best friend. And we had like briefly talked about it. I don't even remember how it came up, but like she kind of told me she has the same problem. But I think we were like both so uncomfortable about it that we would laugh about it and like make a joke about it. Like, oh yeah, I could eat all this and all that and blah, 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 but never take it seriously. Never talk about it seriously. Never talk about helping each other. And it's sad because, you know, I felt like maybe that would have made a difference at that time. And this is a person that I could talk to about like anything, but this was still something.
Just so much like shame and so much hiding. And let me ask you, Sarah, at this point, right, where like you're looking up like what's wrong with me and you're seeing what's happening with your blood sugar and you are like waking up and feeling like you want to die, like as you're looking at this cycle that's happening every single day and like this is your life and how did I get here, what at that time were you really most worried about was going to happen if you weren't able to fix this?
Oh, God. I mean, I don't know. I just being stuck for the rest of my life, really. It felt like something that could never end. And, you know, obviously this was a 4-year thing by this point. And, you know, the number of birthdays and holidays and New Year's that had gone by with all, you know, resolutions or, you know, I'm going to feel better for my birthday. And after this birthday, I'm never going to do this again. Like that kind of thing. It just, like the idea of going on for the rest of my life like that was unbearable. And, you know, I was never suicidal or anything. I don't want to make it seem like that, but it was just like, just the idea of it was so scary and so sad and just miserable, you know, feeling like, well, another thing about it is, I felt like everything else in my life was so great. I was doing great in school. I was, you know, I had a good job, that a part-time job for a while. I was finishing my undergrad. I was making pretty good money. I was able to buy my own car. I was able to go on vacations. I went to Spain. I went to Punta Cana with my boyfriend. I felt like I just had so many things to be grateful for. And I just couldn't really be grateful for them because I had this cloud over me and over everything. And now I'm gonna start getting emotional because this is the part that kills me, that, you know, I had all this great stuff in my life. I was so grateful for everything, yet I couldn't like love myself, and I couldn't live my life to the fullest because I had this part of me that was so down and so depressed, and it was just awful. It was awful. And I just couldn't imagine doing that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I know that, like, being in that place where it's like being behind this wall of glass, and then there's like you have such this good life and you can like see it and like you are grateful for it, but like you can't enjoy it. It's
right.
This is probably a bad analogy, but it's like eating food that you can't taste. It's just like you see that it's there, what's but the it's point? Just like, yeah, what's the point? Like, what is the point of this life with these trips and these memories and without being able to love yourself and enjoy it? Like, that's why people do things, to be able to enjoy them. Right. They go on trips and they have relationships and they have new experiences so that you can enjoy it and have a memory. And like, just the eating disorder just takes everything away. Like, it just takes all of that joy, and it just adds that guilt on top of it, because you should be able to enjoy it. Right. You should be able to be grateful, and you can't access it.
Exactly. And it was like, it just felt like it suffocated everything, because again, I wouldn't lie and say like I didn't have joy in my life, and there weren't things that I was, you know, happy about, but it was just like, you know, I would think about, yeah, I'm happy about this, but I still have this. I still deal with this. I still, you know, feel out of control. And I still, again, the comparison to everyone else around me, like, they don't have to deal with this. And, you know, they couldn't possibly understand what I'm going through. Therefore, I'm not going to, you know, bring it up to them or anything. And yeah, it was just horrible. And like I said, it was suffocating at times. It just felt so, so, so alone. And I knew I wasn't, you know, because I had found this, I don't want to say like community, but like, you know, I found all these YouTube videos of people who were going through the same thing as me, but they weren't people that I could talk to or one-on-one, and they weren't people that I knew. I just knew that I wasn't the only one, but it was still this incredible sense of being alone and nobody else understanding, you know?
Yeah.
And one other huge part of it that I didn't even mention is I felt like I wasn't me. I felt like such a hypocrite and like a liar almost too, because people in my life had looked at me at this point as someone who was super, well, still is. This is still very much me, very, very much passionate about health and fitness and, you know, just living life to the fullest by being your best self, by being in shape and eating healthfully, because, you know, that's the only way you can enjoy yourself. But it was just like, I felt like everyone looked at me as like this perfect, you know, like an inspiration kind of. Like, I know my family would always be complimenting me, like, oh, you're so good. Like, you know, if I can't think of a specific example off the top of my head, but like choosing one food over the other food, or like meal prepping, you know, my family would always be like, oh, you're so good. You know, you, even that sentence right there, like, you're so good. Like, that just made me feel like you have no idea. Like, if only you knew, only you knew what was going on inside this head, because it is not like that at all. And, you know, having this illusion of control, you know, other people thinking that I have all this control, when really I just felt 1,000% out of control. Like, I had no control over food, no control over my thoughts over food. And it was just, you know, how many times I was working out, not necessarily to undo a binge or something like that, but just working out and thinking like, this is only undoing part of your binge. Like,
yeah. Like, no matter how much you do, like, no matter how many hours you do this, like, it's really not going to make up for all of that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing that was so scary too, because at the same time, you know, everything all, or the one thing that drove everything I did was the fear of gaining weight. Like, that's, and it's still like a fear to this day, but it's something that has changed so, so much. And I've been able to let go of so much, you know, through your program, of course. And it was the driving factor of everything is, I can't gain weight. I can't get fat. I have to stay in shape. I have to have abs. I have to have toned legs and arms and a toned stomach. Like, gaining weight would just be the be-all, end-all of everything. Like, it would be worse than binge eating. But little did I know, that was, like, the thought that was driving everything.
Yeah. And Sarah, like, with so many years of just, like, this getting worse and worse and feeling out of control, like, what was that spark for you? Like, what was that thing that inspired you to book a breakthrough session and to take that action despite feeling so stuck and so hopeless?
So to be very honest, I had found your YouTube videos at this point. I think it was actually your podcast that I found first, and I binge listened to all of them. every day on the ride to work, ride home from work, every time I got in my car, I was listening to your podcast, you know, going for walks. And then I remember I just like Googled your name because I was like, well, you know, what else does she have out there? And finding your YouTube videos. And, you know, I know in your videos, you would always say, you know, you can book a free breakthrough session. And I just remember thinking, you know, being on the fence about whether I wanted to do it or not, and like, what would come out of it. And I just remember being at work one day and being like, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, like it's free. I can talk to somebody about it. I can just get some more information about it. Because at this point, I still hadn't told anybody about anything. So I'm like, maybe this is what I need. Like, maybe I just need to tell someone everything that's ever gone on throughout my eating disorder. And I'll somehow miraculously like feel better. Like, I booked that breakthrough session and I honestly went into it never intending on joining a program or really, really doing anything besides that breakthrough session. But little did I know it would be something that changed my life.
And let's talk about you changing your life, Sarah. Yeah. Okay. So what would you say, just like rapid fire, what are some of the most wonderful parts of the freedom and the transformation that you get to experience now? Like, how is life different now?
Life is so, so different. Life around food is completely different, but because life is different around food, it has, you know, kind of spidered into all different aspects of my life. I did go through and write a really nice list of everything that has, well, this is not everything. This doesn't even begin to cover everything, but these are kind of the things that have jumped to the forefront of my mind.
I love it. That's so awesome. I love your list.
Yeah. I have a bad memory, so I'm like, I need to keep everything squared away on here. But I think one of the big things, I mean, I have a lot of specific things on here, but one of the bigger overarching things that is a result of all these changes is how I feel about myself and how I don't want to say like portray myself, but like how I am around other people, specifically like my boyfriend. I mean, me and my boyfriend have lived together now for the past 2 years. So in those 2 years, obviously he's been the person I've been around the most. So he sees the most of how my eating disorder has affected me in the past and the way that I feel about myself and the way that I talk about myself. Like, looking back, I just feel so, so bad because I can't imagine how draining it was for him to constantly be listening to me talk about how much, you know, even if I wasn't like, oh, I hate myself, it was just like, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm not good enough, I hate my stomach, I hate my thighs, I hate whatever, you know, and I just feel so bad about all of that looking back. But like, even today, I told him how I was doing this interview, Freedom Story, and I asked him, and I wasn't planning on doing this, I kind of did it on a whim, but I asked him, like, what have you noticed? Because I'm like, a lot of it is internal, so I don't expect you to notice too much. But he's like, no, he's like, I noticed that, you know, you're not as hard on yourself. And that, like, that's just one thing and one small thing, but it's like a huge thing in and of itself because of, yeah, how hard I was on myself and how I would constantly just, you know, beat myself up in front of him. And again, I just can't imagine how draining that would be and what kind of impact that had on him and our relationship overall. I mean, definitely didn't make things easy between us. You know, how do you have a good relationship with the person that you love if you don't even love yourself? Like, it was just super destructive in a way. Not the relationship.
But just like who you were in that relationship and what that experience was and what the eating disorder is taking away from what your relationship could be. Like, it's such a celebration. There's so many layers there. What would you say is different about, like, what are you celebrating most about your relationship with food now? Like, how is your relationship with food different? What can you do that you couldn't before? Like, how do you see this freedom showing up for you, Sarah?
Yeah, it's incredible because, I mean, my relationship with food is not perfect, but one of the other great things about this program is that I realize it doesn't have to be, like, and the goal is not perfection. It's just, you know, progress, which is continuing every single day. But my relationship with food, it's, I think one of the best ways to sum it up is it's not so black and white. I know that's something we talked about a lot in like Q&As and whatnot. It's like, I have options, you know, I don't, and that's one of the things I wrote on here. Like, I have options. It's not, I did this, so I have to do this. Or I'm sitting here thinking about food at night, so I have no other choice but to run out to McDonald's down the street or Cumberland Farms and grab a pint of ice cream and just eat the whole thing. And like, just like, those were things that felt like I had no control over and I had to do them. And now it's like, oh, like that's just a thought. That's like, I don't have to do anything. Like I don't have to do anything, but I could do this and I could do that. And I could, you know, like I could go on and on and on about all the different options that I have now. So that's pretty amazing.
What is the best part for you about not being controlled by food anymore? Like being able to have any thought or have any food around and know that you're in control and you can do what you want. Like, what is your favorite part about that?
I mean, I guess it just exactly what you said, like that I am in control and that I don't feel controlled by something else that I can't even explain. I just like going grocery shopping is completely different. You know, grocery shopping used to be this thing where it's either I'm getting all of the things and going to eat all of the things, or I'm getting the bare minimum I need to survive. And, you know, because everything else is so scary. It's like, I literally, and I know this is true for a lot of people, I was at the point where I just felt like I couldn't buy snacks. You know, there were so many things that I had deemed binge foods and that I couldn't have in the house. And the only time I would have them in the house is if I already had it in my head that I was going to eat all of it. And I was going, you know, because I had to get rid of it. It can't just be there. Can't just be there taunting me. So grocery shopping is completely different. I mean, just the constant thinking about food is also huge. I know in my breakthrough session, I remember specifically saying that the thoughts about food probably took up about like 80% of my daily thoughts and consciousness. And now, I don't know, I haven't really thought about how much it is now, but I don't know, I'd say probably less than 25%. Maybe even that's like me trying to be modest, you know, because it's just not like that at all. I can just go on with my day and not think about food, especially it's incredible. And it's something that I never, ever could have imagined. Like when you're so deep in your eating disorder like that, you just, and I know you know this, like you just feel like there's no hope. Like there's no possible way of getting out of this. And I mean, I would even watch the freedom stories that you have. And I would, you know, I knew that it was possible because I didn't think that, I was never one of those people that thought they were like fake freedom stories. Or anything.
I know. Sometimes we get that like, how you paid 100 people to lie. And I'm like, no. I think it's funny as if you were like so suspicious.
Exactly. Exactly. Especially knowing that you had done it yourself. And I knew it was possible, but I just felt like, yeah, maybe things would get better, but I would probably never be in that place. I'm like, I'm too messed up to be as free as those people are. But I'm here to say that's not true.
Yeah.
I'm just as free as those other people. It's incredible. It's great.
Beautiful. And I'm so, so excited for you and that, Sarah. And what do you love most about being able to enjoy your life and be grateful for the amazing things and the relationships and take a trip and to be able to access and not have your eating disorder keep you from enjoying this amazing life that you have.
I think what I love the most is actually something that I came to the realization of this past Monday. I was walking to work from the, I didn't actually walk to work, but the parking lot is kind of far away from work. So I was walking to work and I was recording a polo actually. And I had to record the polo because I was just, I felt such a deep sense of like peace and gratitude for everything that I've been through and for this program and for how deeply my life has been changed. I just had to go in the group and celebrate because I was feeling like myself for the first time in, I don't know, like 5 years, however long I've been dealing with this eating disorder. And just like, it was especially significant for me on Monday because I can't even explain to you how many Mondays in the past I would be walking into work feeling so bloated, so disgusting from a weekend of binging. Cause I mean, one of my biggest things was like weekdays are for control and for eating clean and, you know, things along that line. And weekends are, you know, not, even though they would oftentimes, because of that control I would try and have during the week, become like a free for all binge fest. Like even if it wasn't, a lot of the times it would be just like one big binge at night. Other times it would just be, you know, constant eating throughout the day that just turned into like an all day binge. And yeah, just so many Mondays of going into work, just feeling like, I can't believe I did this again. I can't believe this is what I did on my weekend. I can't believe I'm feeling like this again. I hate this. And that was just, even though this is what, that wasn't the first Monday that I felt like I didn't have a weekend like that. You know, it was the first Monday that I was like, okay, like I think this is going to be a thing now. I think this is going to be like my life now. Like I'm just going to be feeling good all the time and not feeling like I hate myself and I made all these horrible decisions over the weekend. I almost said like treat myself, but it's not even treating myself. I just get to like live my life on the weekend. I get to go out and eat with my family or friends or get random ice cream or, you know, random whatever and not have guilt about it. I mean, the guilt was huge. There was very, very, very rare instances in the past of my eating disorder where I actually felt like I deserved something, you know, and it's not like that now because I know I never thought about like what I deserve and what I don't deserve. It's just like, I want something, I can have it. just all of that. And like I said, just feeling like myself and feeling like I'm integrity with myself and that I'm not lying. I'm not a fraud to everybody who's around me. That was one of my other big things, is I just felt like such a fraud. Like nobody knew who I truly was because I was hiding this incredible secret.
Yeah. And so this is such a big deal. This is you. I love how you said like, oh, this is my life now. I just get to feel good every day and in integrity with myself and like live my weekends and like show up and like enjoy your life. And just so thrilled for you. And Sarah, you showed up, you did the work, like you were so coachable. And, you know, through the ups and the downs, you continued to just come back to that practice. And because of that, you get to enjoy not only like the freedom that you have now, but as you've seen, it just keeps on getting better. It's like just the gift that keeps on giving. And I'm just so, so thrilled for you and love being able to celebrate you today. And anything else on your mind that you wanted to share or capture about really what that freedom is like, or something that you would want to say to, you know, those listening that are in that same stuck place that you wondered if you'd ever get out of?
Yeah, I'm double checking my list here, but I mean, the list is, like I said, just like a lot of specific stuff that I don't need to go through, but it's, I mean, actually something that I definitely want to be able to bring up, especially like for other people listening who are, you know, probably in the same position that I was in, you know, watching stories like these and being like, okay, that worked for them, but that's not going to work for me. Or, you know, I'm different. I'm more messed up. It's not about what degree of messed up you are. Like anybody can do this. And the fact that, that this, the way you have this program made is like, it doesn't feel like hard work. And I feel like that is one of the most significant pieces of this, and something that I never could have understood until I started doing it and until I started seeing the changes, is like the changes just kind of happen. Like they're so hard to explain. Because I'm like, how can you have changes without putting in hard work? And it's not like it was, you know, all sunshine and roses all the time. I definitely had times where I had to, you know, put more effort into the practice than others. But it's like, once you really sink into the practice, the changes just happen easily. And like, you just notice them. It's not a willpower approach, like you've said so many times in all your other videos. It's like there's no willpower involved, which is, again, something that I never could have possibly understood before I started doing it. There's none of this like white knuckling it or just like, you know, teeth gritting, like I'm not going to eat that. I'm not going to binge. I'm not going to, like, it's nothing like that. It's just like you do the practices, and because the practices are actually getting at the root of the problem, which is your, for lack of a better term, messed up brain connections.
Yep.
It makes it like almost easy in a way. It's like you get to that root of the problem and the changes happen as a result of that. Like those changes aren't, I'm choosing not to do this and I'm using all my willpower not to do it. It's like, I'm actually changing this part of my brain that had made those things so hard to begin with. But because I'm now changing my brain, now those things are easy. And yeah. I don't know. I want to be able to explain that better, but
I think you put that so well. I think it was such a good description, and something that comes up so often is like, shouldn't this be harder? Like, how is all of this happening when it's so like simple, right? It's just like, oh, I'm practicing and these things get to show up. And that's the thing that makes it so sustainable, because you're not going to use willpower for the rest of your life. And you're not going to like do something really, really hard for the rest of your life. It's like, let's just fix the root of the problem. And then you can just see this getting better and better. And thank you. That's such beautiful insight, Sarah.
No, thank you, Lydia. Thank you. Because I mean, something I think about often now is where I would be right now if I hadn't found this program. And, you know, even if I had found the program, if I decided not to choose to join during that breakthrough session, like, where would I be right now? Like, what would I be doing? How would I feel about myself? Like, all of those thoughts come to mind. And I know they're not really important because I did choose to do it. But I guess I just want to, like, reiterate that for anyone else who's thinking about it and who may be like scared to try it, because it was 1,000% worth it. And even when I think about like other people in the group or whatnot, you know, there's never, ever, ever been someone who thought it wasn't worth it. You know, it's the best thing that I've ever done for myself, truly. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm so happy for you. I'm so thrilled for you. And thank you, Sarah. Thank you for sharing your story and your realness and your authenticity that you get to enjoy.
Yeah.
Now you can live your life as an authentic person. It's just such a beautiful thing. And we are celebrating you and just so thrilled for you and all those you inspire. And anything else on your mind for today?
I just want to say again, thank you to you. And I want to celebrate you and everything that you're doing for people like me and, you know, people who have different kinds of eating disorders, and for, you know, all of the, all the things that you debunk about diet culture, I mean, like, and you know, how much you're like dedicating your life to this and trying to change the way that people think about their bodies and about just food in general, because that was one thing that I never really put a connection with, was, you know, how impacted I was by diet culture. And like I said, the driving force of this entire eating disorder was just, I don't want to get fat. I don't want to, you know, I need to look a certain way for society. I need to eat a certain way to be acceptable. And, you know, like, this is wrong, this is good. Like, everything that society has ever told me, I never really made that connection that that's where all of this is coming from. And that's where it comes from for pretty much everyone that has an eating disorder, is this desire to be socially acceptable and to look a certain way, because we're told that looking this way is the right way to look and looking this way is the bad way to look. And that, like, you know, if you don't have an hourglass figure with six pack abs, then you're not healthy and you're not, you know, it, like, it's just, saying it now is just so ridiculous. And thinking about how many years I spent in that mindset of, I have to look a particular way because that's how healthy, fit people look. Like, no, that's not true at all. And I'm just so grateful that I know that now, and that because of that, I changed the way that I talk about, you know, food, and because I'm just so much aware of how it impacts people and how it can impact the people around me. And I've definitely been guilty of, you know, saying things in the past that are, saying things out loud to other people that are just so destructive and so not helpful. And, you know, being worried about other people in my life who are overweight, and the way that I went about, you know, discussing with them that I'm fearful that they're unhealthy and blah, 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 because I was really just projecting my own insecurities. And that's just, you know, another way how things have changed, because I'm not like that with the people that I love anymore. So I'm just so incredibly grateful for everything that you do for the people in this program. And then, you know, you have all this amazing free content too, that just goes out and changes the way the general public can think too. And I can just only hope and, yeah, dream that your messages continue to go farther and wider, because that's what this world needs, for sure.
Thank you, Sarah. You are an absolute joy, and I just love the boldness and authenticity that you speak, and we just adore you as part of this community and this incredible just example and friend. And thank you for being you. And I am so happy of, you know, it's like, really incredible women get eating disorders. It's like, yeah, oh, how yeah. cool are we? Like, there are amazing women in this community. And then once you have your freedom back, and once you have your authenticity and your time and your money and your, like, you know, resources and mental energy and confidence, it's like that amazing person that you are gets to really be out there in the world and gets to be seen and gets to be appreciated and gets to be known. And I'm so happy yeah. that you get to have that joy and to be out there. So thank you, Sarah.
Me too.
I'm celebrating you. Congratulations again. Well, you guys, like, it has been so amazing to hear and celebrate Sarah's story here. And, you know, just like she was saying, you know, that first step of, like, okay, like, let's just take that next step toward freedom. Like, let's do the next thing that we need to do. And if you guys are wondering, like, is that possible for me? Or if you're wondering, like, oh, okay, I don't know if it would work for me. Like, we will let you know. Like, we will be there to, like, absolutely serve you to the foundation of freedom. And you can book a free breakthrough session.
Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session.
You show up for yourself, and it will be the best time that you have ever spent on your freedom and moving forward in your life, because we want that gift for everyone. Nobody has to struggle with this. Nobody has to die of an eating disorder. Nobody has to live the rest of their lives in this cage. Like Sarah was saying, it's simple to get out, but you've got to know how to do that for you. And that's what we're here for.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!